Well, welcome to First Response, a podcast from First Liberty Institute discussing religious liberty with those who are defending it. I'm Jeremy Dice, one of the attorneys here at First Liberty.
And I'm Justin Butterfield, another attorney at First Liberty.
Well, Justin, we started this program as a teleforum, as I said, a conference call we conducted live since the outbreak of COVID-19. Well, that worked for a while, but we've decided to move this to a podcast, which will not only give us a little more flexibility on the recording end of things, but also it expands upon the topics we might be able to cover in the future.
Well, that's right. We've been discussing many religious liberty issues related to the COVID-19 pandemic and government's responses to it for almost 2.5 months now. But there are a lot of issues to explore when it comes to religious liberty beyond COVID-19, and I hope we can have some enlightening conversations with local, state, and national leaders around the country as these issues of religious freedom are dealt with in Congress, in the courts, and even in your hometown.
Well, I'm looking forward to that as well, but we will have to transition to that over time. Like the rest of the country, we'll be slowly adjusting to things other than COVID-19 over the next few weeks or maybe even months. But for now, let's continue our conversation about religious liberty and COVID-19 with our guest.
Well, our guest today hardly needs any introduction. He may not be primarily known for having memorized the Constitution in high school, but as a lawyer, Jeremy, how can you not love that? Senator Ted Cruz is a United States Senator, former Solicitor General of the state of Texas, and the host of the former number one podcast in the world called Verdict.
Yes, and I must say, Verdict is a fascinating podcast that I think everyone should be subscribing to.
Yes, subscribe to Verdict and also to our podcast. But before all of that, Senator Cruz was a volunteer attorney with First Liberty Institute. He helped us defend the Mount Soledad Veterans Memorial several years ago, which means that he has literally gone into the desert to defend a veterans memorial cross, and his commitment to religious liberty is as longstanding as it is deep. Senator Cruz, welcome to First Response.
Jeremy, Justin, thank you both for having me. I'm glad to be with you.
Well, Senator, we'd like to spend the majority of our discussion talking about how COVID-19 has impacted the religious liberty of everyday Americans. But I'd like to start by discussing Shelley Luther, the owner of a Dallas beauty salon owner who, in the course of a week, reopened her business, was arrested, was told by a judge to apologize and she could go free, but refused and was sent to jail, only to be eventually released by the Texas Supreme Court. Now, that's not a story necessarily involving religious liberty, but what does it say about the greater issue of the battle over freedom, personal responsibility, and the role of limited government?
Well, I think in a time of crisis, people's character is revealed. And sadly, we have seen in this time of pandemic, too many state and local officials willing to violate people's constitutional rights and trample on individual liberty. In the case of Shelley Luther, she is a small business owner, had a hair salon. She opened up her business to cut hair, to do so safely with protective gear. And as a result of that, she was sentenced to 7 days in jail for the crime of cutting hair. And, you know, you referenced just a moment ago that at her sentencing, the judge, who is an elected Democrat in Dallas County, he demanded that she apologize to the elected officials whose orders she had disobeyed. And I got to say, there's something utterly bizarre and wrong about demanding that citizens apologize to elected officials. That's not how it works in the United States. Elected officials work for the people, not the other way around. And I will say, Shelley, to her credit, her response, if you haven't watched it, you really should watch this back and forth, because she didn't respond. She wasn't angry. She wasn't disrespectful. She wasn't yelling at the judge. She just said, I can't apologize for wanting the people who work with me to be able to feed their kids and to be able to pay their mortgage. And they've got to have the money to put food on the table. And I can't apologize. And she went to jail. She spent 2 days in jail. And two things happened after that. Immediately after that happened, I spoke out loudly against it and said, this is nuts. This is crazy. This is not right. And we saw Governor Abbott in Texas issue a new executive order making clear that under the public health orders, no one should be incarcerated for not violating. And I think that was a very important and needed clarification. And then we saw, secondly, the Texas Supreme Court step in and order her release from jail after 2 days in jail. When that happened, I had reached out to her, my family, my dad and my cousin had been on the phone with her, had been praying with her boyfriend while she was in jail. And the next day I got on a plane and flew up to Dallas to get a haircut. And I needed a haircut. It had been 3 months since I'd gotten a haircut. Heidi was laughing at me saying that she thought I was starting to grow a mullet. So I very much needed a haircut, but I wanted to be there as a statement of support. It was the first day actually that hair salons statewide were allowed to open up with limited capacity, with 25% capacity. And when I went there to get a haircut, I wore a mask. She wore a mask. They used sanitizer to clean the chair, to clean the hands of the hairstylist. But I wanted to be there to thank her for the courage she demonstrated in standing up for liberty and also standing up for, you know, she described how a number of the hairstylists who work in her salon, they had been previously going to people's houses and cutting hair because they had to earn a living somehow. And she was saying, well, that's not terribly safe. You don't know if the people you're going to, if it's sick, if they've cleaned their houses. She felt she could give a much safer more consistent with preventing the spread of the disease environment for the haircuts and limit the traffic in it than going to people's homes. And so I was glad to stand with Shelley Luther, and I was glad to get a haircut from her.
Well, I'm glad for both of those things, that she not only got the haircut, but that we communicated the more important issue of limited government, personal responsibility, and generally supporting that idea of freedom. Let me move now to our discussion with regard to religious liberty. I talked recently with a pastor in what you might call a high church tradition. His faith requires the taking of communion weekly, the sacrament. His local authorities told him that they could not practice communion during the pandemic. He believed he was being told by the state not only that he could not practice his faith, but how he was to practice his faith when he was able to resume it. So at what point does the helpful guidance from the state to ward off a pandemic, which I think we all appreciate and can understand, but when does that become then a violation not just of the free exercise clause, but also, I guess, in a sense, of the establishment clause of the First Amendment?
Look, there are some hard questions and hard challenges about the intersection of religious liberty and a public health crisis. Constitutionally, it's clear that in an epidemic, in a pandemic, the government has the authority, for example, to quarantine someone. If someone is to forcibly prevent them from interacting with others, and that's longstanding constitutional authority going back centuries. What government doesn't have the authority to do is target and single out religious faith for discrimination, for persecution, is to treat religious faith as somehow less important than other attributes of personhood and who we are. As you know, the Bill of Rights, the first clauses of the First Amendment of the Bill of Rights protects religious liberty. Free exercise, the Establishment Clause work together to protect our right to live according to our faith and our conscience. And I got to say, as we look nationally, we have seen a number of state and local officials really abusing their power when it comes to faith. We've seen Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, who said that if churches or synagogues opened during this time of crisis, that they risked being permanently closed, that the New York City would go and shut them down. Well, who the heck is Bill de Blasio to be threatening any church or synagogue with being permanently closed? That frankly is reflecting an animus, an antipathy to faith that is coming out loud and clear for anyone listening. We've seen other instances where, for example, in Tennessee and in Mississippi, people were going to church. The churches were driving up in their cars. They were staying in their cars. They weren't even getting out of their cars. They were listening to the pastor over the radio, but the cars were all parked together in the parking lot, and law enforcement was sent in to give tickets to every one of them. There was no public health threat. They're separately socially distanced in their cars. That's an abuse of power. That is crossing the line. Now, what to do with large gatherings is complicated and problematic, and it depends on the facts and how it's applied. Heidi and I, we're members of First Baptist Church in Houston. Our church has not met in person for 2 months. And so every Sunday we now go to church where we watch it online. I pull it up on my phone and put it up on the TV set in the living room, and we all sit in the living room and go to church. The church is planning to reopen at the end of the month in person. And you know, our pastor made the determination that we didn't want to be part of spreading a deadly disease and endangering the safety of the members of the church. I think that was a reasonable common sense decision to make. But I think that there's got to be a balance here, and what is clearly impermissible is singling out and targeting religious faith because of a hostility to faith.
Well, Senator, let me ask you a question about the drive-in church services that you just mentioned. You may recall that right before Easter, First Liberty filed a temporary restraining order against the city of Louisville so that our client could hold a drive-in church service. And in that case, Judge Justin Walker the next day issued a temporary restraining order, which was the Saturday before Easter Sunday. I know you had the chance to interview Judge Walker during his confirmation hearing in the Senate for a new role on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, and he mentioned that TRO and said that he realized that issuing the restraining order is a severe judicial act, but that once he understood what the Constitution said, had he not granted it, the church would have suffered irreparable harm. So I was wondering, what did you make of Judge Walker's comments in the Judiciary Committee hearing, and what do you think that line of thinking means for religious liberty?
Well, I think it was important that First Liberty filed that case. Thank you for doing so. And Judge Walker's opinion granting the TRO is a really important opinion. It's a well-written opinion. He is a district judge right now in Kentucky, but he has been nominated to the D.C. Circuit Federal Court of Appeals. We just had his confirmation hearing, and he performed quite well. He performed admirably. And I think it was important in that opinion for him to articulate that religious liberty can't be singled out and persecuted, and that principle, drawing a line. And I think it's valuable to focus on some of these extremes, whether it's targeting religious liberty, or in the case of Shelley Luther, just being extreme and violating individual liberty. We've also seen in Colorado, a father was playing softball with a six-year-old daughter in a park, was not bothering anyone, was not near anyone, and was threatened with being ticketed or arrested for that. That doesn't make any sense. In Pennsylvania, a woman was ticketed for driving her car alone. She wasn't within 6 feet of anyone. She was driving alone. There's no public health risk to that. And so I think focusing on, you know, in California, there's a video that I tweeted out where they filled a local skate park that teenagers like to use to go skateboarding. They filled it with sand. They brought in bulldozers and just piled sand into the skate park. That's just nutty. I mean, it's one thing, and it is fine to enforce reasonable social distancing norms. So if law enforcement required that kids skating, it had to be separated, that would have been permissible. But to just gratuitously violate and trample on people's liberty doesn't make any sense. And those instances in particular targeting faith, that there's an animus there that is dangerous. Faith and religious expression is protected directly in the Constitution. It's also protected by federal statute. The RFRA, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, creates federal statutory protection for the exercise of faith, and that needs to be respected.
Well, let me turn from Kentucky and California to the state of Illinois, where Governor Pritzker has recently said that houses of worship may not be able to meet in person until a vaccine is developed for COVID-19, if that's something that can actually even be created. Something that, while we hope for it, that may never come, at least that means that the free exercise of religion for now, which is guaranteed by the First Amendment, I might add, is on an indefinite suspension in the state of Illinois. Other state and local officials have imposed similar draconian measures suppressing our civil rights during this time. And perhaps there's a need to protect the public health, and I think we all understand that. But Did our founders really mean for us to lay aside the Constitution in this process?
Of course not. And look, this is revealing of there, unfortunately, a fair number of politicians who are statists, who are authoritarian, and who are quite happy to pull on a jackboot and use governmental authority in a crisis. There is an important role for reasonable public safety restrictions. And in the midst of a crisis, restricting large public gatherings of any kind, neutrally applied, is a very different thing than saying, you know what, we the government leaders don't think church meetings are all that important, so they're indefinitely suspended until we have a vaccine. It could be 12 months. It could be a year and a half or 2 years till we develop a vaccine. I hope and pray it is sooner. And we're working to devote the scientific resources to doing so, to expediting and accelerating the regulatory process to do so. But we don't know how quickly it'll take for a vaccine to be developed. And it is one thing if you're at ground zero of a massive public health outbreak and you're saying, okay, everyone stay home for a period of time. That's an extraordinary measure, but there are circumstances where it may be justified. What is not justified is saying we're going to allow gatherings in some circumstances where we approve it, but religious faith is not one of them. And I'll give you another example from the state of North Carolina that illustrates it powerfully, which is the governor there, a Democrat, deemed abortion facilities, providing abortions, to be essential services. So he waived abortion facilities from applying to the prohibition on gatherings of 10 or more in North Carolina. Some strong pro-life activists, good friends of mine, the Benham brothers, went to provide pregnancy counseling at an abortion facility. Now, they did so in compliance with law. They did so, they were socially distancing. They were at least 6 feet apart. So they were not trying to endanger the public health. But for women that were going in to get an abortion, they wanted to let them know there were alternatives to abortion, that they could pursue adoption. There were alternatives to save the life of the unborn child. And this is a ministry that they had carried on for many years, and they were there giving these mothers the alternatives to abortion. And law enforcement was sent in and arrested them. And I will say it that's another video, like the video of Shelley Luther's sentencing that I tweeted out, and I'd encourage you to see if you haven't. If you look at the response of the Benham brothers, they're very respectful. In fact, they're thanking the police officers who are putting handcuffs on them, and they're thanking them for doing their jobs. But they're following the orders of elected officials who are abusing their power. And in that instance, they're abusing their power in a way that is quite unevenly applied. So if they're going to give a waiver for all the doctors and nurses and staff in the abortion clinic, there were more than 10 of them gathered in close proximity, and obviously performing a procedure like an abortion, you're getting a lot closer than 6 feet away in that procedure. If the state is going to deem that essential, then the state can't discriminate against pro-life speech and pregnancy counseling seeking to help those mothers and give alternatives to abortion. It is every bit as urgent. That life, you're going to save that life right there and then, or you're not going to. And I think that the differential way the law was applied reflected the political and partisan animus of the governor, who is strongly pro-abortion and opposes those who are pro-life, and that's comparable to, if you look at Illinois and sort of signaling out, okay, churches, you guys don't get to meet till we tell you. You don't get to do that. That's not what our Constitution allows elected officials to do.
Well, Senator, thank you for that. Let me wrap up our discussion with one more question, asking you to look a bit into the future. Some have suggested this present social distancing reality, including many of these restrictions that we've seen on Americans and including on religious liberty, is our new normal. Do you think it is? And how do you think that having gone through this pandemic and this experience, it will affect America's appreciation for our fundamental freedoms, say, in 6 months' time?
Yeah. So I absolutely do not think it is our new normal. I think these are our unique times. We are in a public health crisis. We're going to defeat this pandemic. We're going to develop treatments that are effective. We're going to develop a vaccine. We're going to develop a cure. And the technological innovation, the power of the American free enterprise system is potent, and we will overcome it. It may take a little bit of time, but we will. I also think that there are those on the left who are using this to advance their longstanding partisan agenda, who want to see socialism. Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, famously said, "You never want to waste a good crisis." And we're seeing too many Democratic politicians doing exactly that, using this as an excuse to come in and trample liberty. If you're a statist, if you believe in government authority in all circumstances because government is effectively God, then this is an opportunity to try to crush the crazy individualist who would like to live free of your control. I don't think the American people are amenable to that. That is inconsistent with our history. That is inconsistent with who we are. I think individual liberty is powerful. Look, religious liberty is, as everyone at First Liberty knows well, is not about advancing any particular faith. I'm a Christian. The beauty of the First Amendment is it's up to each of us to make that choice, to follow our own heart, our own conscience, to seek out truth, to seek out and worship the Lord God with all of our heart, mind, and soul, but to make those determinations ourselves. And that individual liberty is threatening, it is dangerous to those who want an all-powerful state. You know, many of y'all know my father, who's a pastor, Rafael Cruz. My dad was born in Cuba. He saw the rise of communism in Cuba. You know, I'll tell a quick story that my dad told me. So my father was fought in the revolution. He was imprisoned. He was tortured. And my grandmother, his mom, was a sixth grade teacher in Cuba. And when Castro took over, she told him and told me the story that when Castro took over, they would send in soldiers to kindergarten and first grade classes. And they tell all of the students, they'd say, "Close your eyes." And they'd say, "Pray to Jesus for some candy." And the kids would do so, and they'd open their eyes, and there'd be no candy. And then they'd say, "Okay, close your eyes again. Now pray to Fidel Castro for candy." And the kids would open their eyes, and the soldiers would have put candy on every one of their desks. And, you know, my grandmother, as a sixth grade teacher, was charged with teaching communism, on indoctrinating kids. And my grandmother did something. She feigned insanity. She couldn't quit. She was not allowed to quit. So she feigned insanity. She got a friend who was a doctor to diagnose her as nuts. And she like began foaming in the mouth and running out of the classroom because she said, "I am not going to poison the minds of these children. And the only way to get out of it is to appear to be ill." Those who believe in government power hate faith, and they hate faith because it is an allegiance to something other than the state. I think America, at our heart, who we are as a people, we value individual liberty, we value diversity. So this is not the new normal. You may see some differences. You know, maybe people shake hands less. I hope we don't hug less, because I think, you know, hugging those you love is a wonderful thing, but you got to do it in a time and environment where it's consistent with safety. So it may change at the margin some of our practices, but it will not change the foundational commitment to individual liberty, because that's who Americans are.
Well, thank goodness for that. Well, Senator, it has been a profound pleasure to discuss this important issue with you. And thanks for the work you've done, not only with First Liberty, but for the important work you do every day in the United States Senate. And also, I'll add into that the very enjoyable podcast, Verdict, which I'll remind our listeners was a number one podcast in the world. I hope they'll subscribe to it. But thank you again for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And God bless. And thank you for the fantastic work First Liberty does.
It's always good to work with Senator Cruz and hear how he thinks through these issues. What I find interesting is that while our discussion centered around the issue of religious freedom, you'll note how often he returned to the broader importance of freedom itself, couched within the delicate balance between government responsibility and individual liberty.
Yeah, that's an important and, as you say, delicate balance. And I don't think any of us have questioned the important role government plays in protecting the public health. Our concern, like Senator Cruz's, is with how state officials have flexed their power while doing so. As he said, and as the founders of our country understood, the lesson of history is that an over-aggressive assertion of power leads to the suppression of individual liberty. We protect civil liberties because those are liberties given to us by God, and the employment of those liberties are toward a duty that is higher than government. And I thought Senator Cruz made a very interesting point in noting that governmental totalitarians so often hate faith in God because they believe that the highest duty should be to the state and that people should look to the state for answers, not to God, which, you know, often means that the people making those rules want us to look to them. But that is why there is no pandemic exception to the U.S. Constitution. Our fundamental rights are true even when they're hard, or they wouldn't be rights. They would only be placebos granted at the convenience of whoever is presently in charge.
Well, it's also why we have been working on behalf of churches and houses of worship throughout this pandemic. Last Friday, for instance, after our last show, we won another temporary restraining order against the state of Kentucky, this time for churches to be able to host in-person services in their state. In granting that TRO, Judge Tatenhove, I think, put it well along the lines of what you were just saying. He said, "It would be easy to put the Constitution on the shelf in times like this, to be pulled down and dusted off when more convenient. But that is not our tradition. Its enduring quality requires that it be respected even when it's hard," unquote. Well, in other words, the Constitution was made for times just like this. It preserves individual liberty by limiting the power of government when fear and disquiet is driving much of our decision-making.
Well, that's exactly right, Jeremy. And as Senator Cruz said, we understand the importance of protecting the public health, but any restrictions imposed for that reason still have to be exercised within the limited powers of government articulated in our Constitution and be respectful of the individual liberties protected within it.
One thing this virus has done, it seems, has been to insert a bit of truth serum in the mix. One of the points I found particularly instructive in Senator Cruz's remarks is that the virus has sort of exposed the character of those in power. Those inclined to an ever-increasing state have seized the opportunity to utilize the full power of the state, most often to the detriment of religious liberty.
Well, you know that old quote about Abraham Lincoln, "If you want to find out what a man is to the bottom, give him power." Well, this pandemic has handed a lot of government officials a lot more power than they usually have, and we're learning what they are at their core.
Well said, Justin. Thankfully, at the end of the day, we can take encouragement from Senator Cruz's final comments, in which he looks to the future and sees not a bleak country devoid of freedom, but one that values, perhaps more than ever, the importance of the important role of religious freedom and how it plays in our commitment to freedom itself.
Let's hope so. For now, we should probably wrap things up.
Yes, indeed. Let me remind our listeners to go to firstliberty.org to review the important cases we're working on throughout the country. And I want to send you also to iTunes to do just a few things for us. First, to subscribe to this podcast, First Response. And when you do, would you leave us a few comments to let us know how you're liking the show?
That would be helpful. And while you're on iTunes, be sure to subscribe to Verdict, Senator Cruz's wildly popular podcast, bringing you the latest from inside Washington, D.C.
And finally, consider sharing the show with a friend. You can even post about it on social media, and be sure to tag First Liberty if you do. For now, I'm Jeremy Dice.
And I'm Justin Butterfield.
Thanks for listening, and remember to learn how First Liberty Institute is protecting religious liberty for all Americans. Visit firstliberty.org.